Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Good morning, Chris Vandercook.
Good morning, Beth Ann. You know, I've seen a lot of progress in this country over my lifetime about how it handles racism, but there's a ways to go.
Evidently, and that's going to be the subject of our first conversation this morning. You may remember that the last time we talked with him, UH Law Professor Justin Levinson was working on a study asking a sensitive question. Are people unconsciously racist? That question has implications for many types of behavior, but in this case, especially how jurors react in cases where the death penalty could be the outcome. The study was researched in conjunction with the University of North Carolina and Rutgers University. Justin Levinson is the lead author, and he's here now in studio with us. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
Seeing the study complete, as we were talking about it when you were first starting it, now we actually look at the study, It seems that you proved what you kind of set out to see, that in fact we have this unconscious bias and that it affects us in lots of different ways, but especially when you're talking about how people value human life in the case of a death penalty jury.
Right. Well, going into this study, we did know that what we call implicit biases or unconscious biases are quite powerful and prevalent. What we didn't know is what would happen in this particular study. And in this study, we tried to expand the discussion to look at whether people unconsciously valued white lives as being worth more than black lives, which is obviously a pretty intense topic.
You looked at the top states where we have the death penalty, what, 6 of the 7 of them?
Right, exactly.
And that include, well, you can have the list there.
Yeah, so we looked at Alabama, Arizona, California, Oklahoma, Florida, and Texas.
So none of these were regionally localized to any particular part of the country. You simply took them based on the death penalty issue.
Exactly.
But when we start to look at who has more, you know, value in someone's eyes as they sit on a jury, how did you test that specifically?
Right, so when you ask the question, do people value one life as being worth more than another, it's very difficult to test. So what we set out to do was create a method that captured it without people's awareness. And that involves a category sorting task where people see words and pictures flash on their computer screen. And they're required to sort words and pictures. So for example, we tell them to sort together pictures of Caucasian faces with value-related words, such as worthwhile, worthy, value, valuable. And we tell them to sort together pictures of African-American faces with worthless type words. So drain, expendable, worthless, for example. And then we switch the categories. So they have to sort black with worth and white with worthless. And we measure how fast they can do it. And basically what we find is that people cannot categorize black and worth as fast as they can categorize white with worth.
So if I'm sitting there, if you were giving me this test, I would be looking at a screen.
Yes.
And seeing pictures of either black people or white people flashing on it, and then be told to sort based upon whichever category you would give me, either worth or worthless.
Exactly.
What was the time differential?
Well, so we measure this in milliseconds, right? And when you do it in milliseconds, a 50 to 100 millisecond difference is actually quite substantial. And so those are the kind of differences we found. I mean, statistically, you do a lot of conversions and there are a lot of things you have to do with the data. But we found moderate to strong biases, not just in value of life stereotypes, but also in more traditional stereotypes that we tested also.
Specifically what?
So for example, concepts of lazy, hostile, dangerous, compared to things like calm and trustworthy.
Milliseconds making differences in how someone judges whether a life is valuable or worthless when it comes to having to pass judgment on someone. What does that correlate toward when you look at how many, or were you able to look at how many people were judged as being worthless in a death penalty case versus those who were seen as being worthwhile simply because of the color of their skin?
Well, it's hard to quantify the effect over a huge population like all the death penalty cases. We did run it in conjunction with a study where people had to make decisions, and we did find that in certain circumstances it actually predicts. I think the bigger thing for us is that this type of research has already been established to predict decision-making. So medical decision-making, whether somebody gets a certain drug or not, job hiring decisions, whether someone is asked to give an interview for a job or not invited to give an interview. So economic allocation, so giving money to student organizations or charities, all those things have actually been connected to these reaction time-based unconscious biases.
What's not part of the study, though, is any discussion about Native Hawaiians. That's not in it, even though sometimes Native Hawaiian folks will say, you know, I go someplace else and they think I'm black or not, based upon the shade of skin. Anything that you tend to do with or you intend to do with this study to more localize it to Hawaii?
Yeah, so this study, we had a national focus because, well, until now, we really didn't have to deal with the death penalty in Hawaii at all. So we were focused on death penalty states and the statistics as to who's on death row, which is really shocking when you look at the numbers. In Hawaii, we do have the racial bias issue with black and white in Hawaii. I should just say that when I run these types of studies in Hawaii, I get the same results. With regard to Native Hawaiians, we don't have as much data. I did run, for example, skin tone study in Hawaii, where we tested whether showing people a photo of a perpetrator with slightly different skin tone affects the way evidence in a trial is evaluated. And it absolutely showed that.
And that was skin tone based on a forearm only, not
exactly.
Face.
Yeah, so we had a masked perpetrator in that study. And so all we did was manipulate the only skin that was showing, and we asked people to rate the evidence that we showed them. We gave everybody the same evidence, and people who had seen for only 3 seconds a photograph of a darker-skinned perpetrator thought the evidence tended to indicate more guilt.
We do know, though, that disproportionately Native Hawaiian youth and adults wind up incarcerated. So how do you move the study from the death penalty issue to talking about how we judge people when we decide to incarcerate them?
Well, the methods can be transferred to Hawaii, and that's something I have a lot of students interested in, and I have colleagues that are interested in that issue. So we're beginning to work on it. But the data is not there yet. Having said that, the data on the criminal justice system is there, and you had the OHA report showing a lot of that and parole decisions. To me, the place to investigate is the discretion points within the system, right? When do police have discretion? When do prosecutors have discretion? When do judges have discretion? When do parole officers have discretion? And that's where you see these implicit biases, specifically regarding to criminality and character issues, come into play. So if a parole officer sees somebody and they have associations with laziness, for example, or they have associations with drug user or violence, those things can actually override the true character of the person they're looking at.
So what do we do if we know that we have implicit biases and we still are trying to operate as if we can be objective people in certain ways? How is there any way of being able to overcome that or to compensate for it?
Yeah, so I mean, the first thing to do is actually to explore this and recognize it, right? We have to look within and say, we may be egalitarian people. When I walk down the street, I don't think that I'm going to cross the street differently based upon who's on the other side. Or I'm not going to remember when to lock my car doors based on who I see crossing the street in front of me, right? We have to acknowledge that those things operate within each of us. And then we have to take some kind of responsibility for it. It is automatic. It is part of how humans work. But there are harmful consequences. Once we've done that, we can learn about it. And there are techniques people can practice to actually overcome this, such as stereotype replacement.
And we'll talk about that another time. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And glad your study was finished.
I appreciate it.
Justin Levinson is professor of law and founding director of the Culture and Jury Project at the University of Hawaii's William S. Richardson School of Law. His research focuses on how human minds operate in the legal context, including in jury selection, decision-making, and biases. He's the editor of the book Implicit Racial Bias Across the Law. You're listening to The Conversation on statewide member-supported HPR2, now at 8:15. Taking a look at what's coming up, a Ka'ava fifth grader with a flair for historical research. But first, the backyard quiz.
Unihua, ulehua, unihau, ukaua, uahu, umulokai. Maui. Uka ho'olau.